tip today in association with Slattery's of Pecan, your main Peugeot dealer for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Welcome back to the Tip FM Broadcast Centre on Pierce Street in Nenagh. And Mary is online with me. Good morning, Mary.
Morning, friend.
Nice to talk to you today. You were watching Primetime last night, Mary, and you have a few points to make about it.
Well, I went to bed so upset last night because it was so, you know, you just couldn't imagine that it was happening in the country.
And just for people who mightn't have seen it last night, Mary, just tell us about the programme.
Well, it was about the carers.
Yeah.
Carers in Ireland that are looking after children with disabilities, grown-up children, some of them in their 50s, that are, they've looked after all their lives.
Yeah.
There's no help for them. No, nothing there for them. And they, I just felt so annoyed about it because the simple reason that Finian McGrath was on the programme, and all we heard from him was all he had done since he went in, things that he was going to do and things that were happening now and all this, just bull, in other words. The things that those people that have elderly children and that are looking after them all their lives, you know, what they were getting, they had no help, no respite, no nothing. One man there, he was 75 years old. He was looking after his wife with dementia. We saw him feeding her and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
He didn't want her to go into a home. But he got a mild stroke, and she eventually ended up in a nursing home. And he was so upset about it.
The poor dote.
Miriam asked him why he was so upset. He said, because I loved her, he said. And I still love her, he said, and I want her to stay at home.
Isn't that heartbreaking?
And things like that. And then I was thinking about it, and I just thought about a fortnight ago there when all this going on with the government and all the rest of it, Frances Fitzgerald and that.
Mm.
Now, she walked out on Tuesday morning out of government with 1.8 million in pensions, right?
Right.
She went to a Kinnegale Jew that night, and she happened to be nominated to go for government in the next
general election, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, she's 67 or 69, I'm not sure, years of age. Now, why are these people in government at that age? The likes of Finian McGrath, Shane Ross, those two brothers from Kerry.
Yeah.
You know, all these elderly people.
Are we being represented?
They walk out of government with their pension.
Yeah.
People in ordinary jobs have to get out when they're 65 or...
Are we being represented properly at all, do you think, Mary?
Sorry?
Are we being represented properly at all, do you think, with all that's going on?
Well, I'll tell you something. There's people in that government. I've never seen them, never heard their voices. I watch leaders' questions every week.
Yeah.
And some of them, they're backbenchers or frontbenchers or whatever they are. Some of them never have a word to say. There's the same few, same faces, same things, day in, day out. And then you have, you know, they can walk out of government. They all have their pensions. They're secure for their old age. But people in ordinary jobs don't have a pension.
How do you decide who you vote for in elections, Mary? I mean, have you any allegiance to a political party or?
I have no allegiance. I was reared in a house where Fianna Fáil were the top notches.
Yeah.
All my life, but I lost interest in them when Charlie Haughey took over and all that carry on with him.
Right.
And I mean, Jack Lynch was a gentleman, and since he left the Fianna Fáil party, there has been nobody in that party that have come near him. People, they're just there for what they...
So how do you vote now? Is it on a personality basis or do you vote at all?
All those elderly people should be out of the government when they get to 60 years of age. Finian McGrath was there last night. He could hardly keep his eyes open. I mean, he looked as if he needed respite himself. not alone people looking for it from him.
Yeah, his performance last night was rather poor, all the pundits
absolutely,
are saying today. So, yeah.
Absolutely disgraceful. And the things that those poor, misfortunate people are going through is just... I just can't believe that it's happening in our country. And fair dues to RTE and Miriam O'Callaghan and Prime Time. We'd never know nothing, only for them.
Well, I have to contradict you on that, because, I mean, we do an awful lot on Tip FM about carers, and we make sure that people know about it.
That's away from you. I know that, that you do. But I'm just saying that they go into the inside and the underneath, the depths of everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we learn things that we wouldn't learn otherwise.
The problem, of course, with being a carer is that it's very hard to lobby, or it's very hard to protest, because you're at home caring. That's one of the issues, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I mean, there's so much young talent in you know, interested in politics and all that. Why not leave it to them? Mm. Have a new, completely reshuffle of government. Get rid of all those people that don't need it.
But hold on now, Mary, because we have the youngest Taoiseach we've ever had.
Yeah, well, don't talk to me about him.
Why not? What do you think of him? I mean, he's young. He's supposed to be young and vibrant. And
yeah, I know, but he's not my cup of tea. I wouldn't...
What do you mean by that, now?
I don't know. I just couldn't warm to him at all.
Why?
I don't know. I feel he's... there's no depth in him. You know, he's in there, he's in a powerful position, and that's what he wanted.
Mm. But how do you mean there's no depth in him?
Sorry?
What do you mean by that when you say there's no depth in him?
I don't feel that there's any feeling in him. I mean, it's politics. Mm. It's real brazen politics, as far as I'm concerned. There's no feeling for people. You have people on trolleys, you have the health services, such a disgrace. You know,
you have homelessness.
You have, and I mean, that is the worst of all.
Mm.
At the moment, it's the worst, and it's such a bad what would you say, outlook for this country.
Well, Leo Varadkar played that down a bit, because he made comparisons with some rather dodgy data from other countries, and he said, "Look, we're not doing all that bad where homelessness is concerned."
Well. I mean, they don't realize what these people go through. You know, they have no idea. They have their homes, and we all have our homes, thanks be to God.
A lot of people on to agree with you about that program last night. Some people saying it was very hard to look at. It was very hard to watch.
I went to bed, Fran. I couldn't watch the end of it. I really couldn't. Yeah. I went to bed and I was so upset last night over it. I just couldn't get it out of my head. I couldn't believe that it was happening in the country.
Right.
A Catholic country, you know, where we were brought up to care for each other.
And are you a carer yourself, Mary?
No, I'm not. I worked with the elderly for about 20 years. I worked with them.
Did you?
In a welfare home. And, I mean, I put my neck on the line there too, because I raised a lot of things that shouldn't be happening.
Right. Well, okay, and we can talk to you about that at another time, because we have to be careful what we say, needless to say.
I know,
but,
yeah.
But what in terms, are we any better than we were years ago in terms of how we look after people, or is it worse?
It's absolutely worse. Absolutely. I mean, every family now, you know, it's a case of, I know young people, young married couples now, that they have to work.
Yeah.
And they have to, you know, they have mortgages, they're trying to keep their heads over water. But if they have an elderly relative, I mean, when they become, you know, a problem, it's just a home. You know,
yeah.
That never happened before. My mother and father died. My mother was 87, my father was 89. And they lived with me until they died. Both of them.
So you looked after them?
There was no such thing as a home. I wouldn't, you know, the day my father got sick, the Lord had mercy on him, and the doctor came out to him. I rang the doctor, and the doctor came out, and he said to me, you know, he said, he's had a mild stroke now, he said, and he could be like this for months. He said, we'll get an ambulance and we'll get him to hospital. And I said, no. I said, he's not going anywhere. I said, I'm here, I said, I look after him. My mother was alive at the same time, and she was elderly. We didn't let him go, but he didn't live anyway. He died that evening.
That was an awful lot for you to take on, Mary.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, you know, you respected your parents, and you respected your elderly people that time.
And what are you saying about now? Are you saying that we're too quick to put people into nursing homes?
I really do, and I think things are made easy for people to do that. You know.
Yeah.
I really do. I don't believe in the homes, really.
You see, the only thing I'd say to you is that nowadays to pay a mortgage, you need two people out working.
Well,
you know,
you do. I understand it's a lot of the trouble. But I mean, a lot of the mortgages too. I mean, they're taking homes off of people. The way the banks, you know, all that austerity and all the rest of it a couple of years ago. I mean, people were pinned to their collars.
You sound very disappointed at the way the country has turned out.
Absolutely terrible. I'm so disgusted with that program last night. I just couldn't believe it. I mean, you know, you gloss over things and all that, but that was downright real things that were happening in the country. And the government should be ashamed of themselves. They should actually be ashamed of themselves.
I don't think they have any shame about that. You know, they don't have any shame about homelessness. They don't have any shame about the fact that our health service is a war zone.
No, and they're doing nothing about it. And they really haven't got the know-how. They just haven't got the know-how.
Mm. And it's not just this. I mean, the successive governments, in fairness, is not just this particular administration. But we heard about the notion of new politics this time round. Do you think that held any water in any way? You laugh at it.
Doesn't hold any water with me anyway.
Did it not?
Tell you that. No, nothing. I mean, what I'd love to see there is the young people there. I mean, there's so much intelligence and so much intellect in the youngsters now. You know, they're so wicked.
But,
I mean, you see,
but again, I have to put it to you. I mean, you seem to think, Mary, that that's the answer. But I mean, Leo Varadkar is a young guy. Simon Coveney is a young guy. Owen Harris is a very young guy in health at the moment. You know, Pascal Donoghue is a young fella.
Yeah, they are. I didn't mention them. No, right.
But these are the guys with the power at the moment. They're relatively young, you know.
Yeah, but if you have a young people coming in there in the elections that you get a chance to vote in, they mightn't all be in power.
Right. Okay. Would you say to political parties out there now, because they're moving towards deciding who is going to represent them in the next general election, what would you say to them? That they should go for younger people? Should they go for women?
Go for younger people and have plenty of women in there, women that understand the what's happening.
Right.
I mean, men don't understand as not being rude now to you or anything like that, but I mean, women are more, what would you say, they're more worldwide-wise, you know.
Do you think so?
I do, I really do, and I mean, they're rearing families, they're the mainstay. Of the home.
I'm not sure I'd agree with you particularly. I mean, look at the disaster that Theresa May has made of Brexit and the UK. You know, Arlene Foster, I'm not so sure about either. You know, it's not necessarily true that if you put a woman in place that everything's going to be wonderful.
No, and I mean, Leo Varadkar, he brought that, what's her name, Madigan woman. From the back benches into the front benches.
Yeah, Josefa.
No, I mean, I don't know much about her. I never heard of her.
She's a solicitor.
You know. But maybe she could be good.
Right. You never know. But in the meantime, anyway, you think a plague on all their houses. You're not satisfied with what's happening.
No. And it's a disgrace, and the government should be ashamed of themselves. Really.
All right, Mary, good to talk to you today, and thank you very much indeed. 1800-938-007. You can text on 083-311-3311. We're live from Nina today.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
Welcome back to Tip Today Live from Nina Today. Now, a public meeting on housing and homelessness is set to take place in the county this evening. 3,500 families are on the local authority housing list in the Premier County, with 120,000 across the country. And the government has come under repeated criticism for not making real headway in dealing with the crisis. Now, there are several speakers at tonight's event in the Clonmel Park Hotel, including my next guest, Dr. Rory Heron, lecturer at Maynooth and a member of TASC, the Economic Inequality Think Tank. Rory, good morning to you.
Good morning, Fran. And just quick, I'm not actually working for TASC anymore. I'm just a researcher in Maynooth now.
I beg your pardon about that.
No problem,
and
no
we're trying to give you some extra work, you see. That's what it is, Rory.
Okay, okay.
Listen, I'm sure you're going to get a great welcome to Clonmel tonight. I was reading some of what you had to say, though, and some of it is very stark indeed. One point you made was you said the future increasingly looks like it's going to be an extreme dystopia. And that's making reference, I suppose, to the Blade Runner movie and all of that.
Yeah.
Is it that stark? Is it that bad?
Well, if you look at the figures, or, you know, the housing situation at the moment in particular, and in talking about that, I was talking about kind of wider, what we might call inequality and the whole issue of low pay and, you know, what type of work are we going to have in the future? But specifically around the housing, and it is connected to the issue of low pay, because part of the problem with rising rents and rising house prices is because wages aren't increasing, work is much more, particularly for younger generations, much more precarious. Short-term contracts, they can't get mortgages, they're stuck in the private rental sector. So there's a big connection between the quality of work, pay and housing. And this raises the issue then, well, what does the government do in this context? And the problem has been that the way I see it is that obviously we had the crash and we had austerity, and that really housing was seen as a kind of an aside issue, and that really the focus was on recovering the economy, saving the banks. And essentially this crisis has emerged as a result of that, that the eye was taken off the ball of housing and how important that is to an economy, to a society. And so we stopped building, you know, public social housing. The affordable housing schemes were stopped, and all the focus was on trying to get big investors in to buy up the, you know, the vacant properties, the property that had crashed, the loans. So we have all these vultures and big investors here now, who are pushing up rents and prices, and we have no private, you know, building construction sector anymore. It was devastated during the crash. And so we have this kind of perfect storm of the state isn't building, the private sector isn't building. And unfortunately, the approach of the government has been to really just focus on how can it get the private sector, private development sector back up and running again, rather than actually seeing that it has the answer in its own power, which is the state to build. And if we look at other countries like Denmark, Austria, they're very good examples where the state provides support to what are called housing agencies or not-for-profit state agencies, and they build rental housing for anybody. It's not just for people on low incomes. And so what I've been arguing for quite a while is that the state and the government could be doing a lot more to address this crisis. And, you know, people, I haven't been to the States, but people who talk about it, who visited there recently, talk about, like, the scale of homelessness over there is just unbelievable. And that if we don't, and the States, the United States is an example of a country that doesn't provide social housing on any scale. And that is the kind of, in part, the dystopia I was talking about. The people, the crisis now is an emergency. You know, we see it on the streets of Dublin. I'm sure you see it even, you know, in Tipperary, places like
that. We
hear
about it constantly now, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's my fear is that there's no reason that this crisis can't continue to get worse and worse for years to come. And we only have to look at the States as that, you know, that potential. That
but you see, some of us, Rory, we want to keep our head in the sand. And if we have a Taoiseach that's coming out with dodgy data, making comparisons between our country and the UK, for example, and telling us, listen, you know, we have a problem, but it's not all that bad. We're delighted with that because we can put our head in the sand and forget about it.
Yeah, and I was really disappointed with those statements by, and it wasn't just the Taoiseach, it was, you know, government ministers, it was also the head of the housing agency as well made similar comments, and I was
Well, that was dreadful, what the head of the housing agency said. That was just awful.
Yeah, it really was, because I was like, why would you say that? You know, why, if, if you're there in a situation and you're actually trying to, because we do need what's called, like, we do need solidarity across society. We do have to make real decisions about where we prioritize our investment if we're going to address this crisis. And by downplaying the crisis, it doesn't give you then the ability to go out to the people and say, look, we have to, for example, forgo tax cuts in the next budget and instead invest in housing, or we need to actually, you know, make hard decisions around priorities, or even it just, to me, it was a political move to try and undermine, I think, try and downplay the crisis. But also, I think there is a sense, I would see it anyway in talking to people and feel it, that, there is a sense people are really disgusted by this. You know, they're outraged. That
are they, though, really?
I think they are. You know, and we only have to look at, like, Apollo House. There was a huge outpouring of public support for the Apollo House occupation. I think that there's a lot of people feel disempowered. They feel there's nothing they can do. And as you said, when you have the Taoiseach coming out and saying, oh, really, this is just normal. And a lot of people feel ashamed about it. A lot of people
it's
feel
just
it's their
the,
fault.
The closest thing we came to rising up, I suppose, was the Apollo House homelessness, to bring it to the attention of people. But that sort of petered away then, and we forgot about it again for a while.
Yeah, it did. And the reason why that ended quite was because there was a High Court injunction
indeed,
and people had to leave. And again, you know, it was another example of why, you know, the state had taken a different response and said, look, you know, okay, let's look at how we're using vacant buildings. And they are looking at that now. So it's not true. Apollo did have an impact in putting the focus. But there's more events now happening. There's an event outside the Dáil next Tuesday, a kind of creative protest by artists again. There's other events happening. There's this public meeting. I know there's going to be a demonstration early in the new year, a national demonstration. So I think this has not gone away by any means. And I think that, you know, the trade unions in particular are really concerned about this, because for them, it's their workers are saying, look, we will need an increase in wages if these house prices and rents continue. And where does that put the economy? And the government is being very short-sighted.
But if you take the whole downturn, Rory, and the whole injustice of that austerity, in other words, the people with very little were paying the piper for what the big money guys got us into. And we continue to do that. I was surprised there wasn't a revolution over that.
Well, it was very, there was lots of different reasons for why we reacted in the way we did. And a lot of it, I think, does come down to, there was a general argument made, similarly in a way, what's happening now, that it was our fault, that we partied during the boom, that we took on this debt. And there is a lot of that goes on, that people's problems that they face in their lives, the system works in many ways in Ireland to blame them rather than saying, well, actually, there's a society issue here. And I think that happened initially. And then, of course, the main trade unions didn't engage in any major protests. Yeah. We had the Labour Party enter government. But the water movement was, in actual fact, the biggest act of civil disobedience of any of the bailout countries. As I describe it, we came late to protesting austerity, but we did it in style. And we actually, you know, the people did rise up in that sense. So it's not true that we didn't. It took a long time.
But if you know what I mean about a single issue, if you know what I mean, where water was concerned.
It was a single issue, but for most people who were involved in that, it wasn't a single issue.
Right, it was a protest.
It was the issue that kind of broke the camel's back, that they could engage, and again, they could actually stop water meters outside their house, and that is an issue around housing. As I said, people feel they can't do anything. But I think that there is a lot people can do, even by expressing it to their local politician, by ringing up radio stations like yourselves, by talking about it, by saying, look, this isn't normal. We're not going to accept this. There has to be other ways of dealing with this crisis. I think that would get change.
Is there anything in the political picture that you see at the moment with that mixture of independence and then this new politics and Fianna Fáil with their agreement with Fine Gael? And all, is there anything in there that is giving you hope for the near future?
Well, I think that there is a hope in possibly their own weakness, in that there's not one dominant party, or even if you think of the Fine Gael Labour coalition that had, you know, a huge majority. I think the fact that Fine Gael are dependent on Fianna Fáil, the fact that it's a relatively unstable political situation, I think opens up an opportunity for wider society to put pressure on them because they're a bit more responsive. I do think there's an opportunity in that. And I think that there's an opportunity, obviously, with independence to exert more of a a pressure on the government. So I do think that we're in quite an unstable political situation, which means that if ordinary people say, well, this is the issue that really matters to us, that political system, I think, can be potentially more responsive.
Right. But we've had that for the past year now, and still we have homelessness, and still we have people on trolleys, and still we have poverty and a very unequal recovery.
We do all those issues, and I have made that argument about that is because the policies that have been pursued have prioritized essentially the kind of status quo system, the status quo nature of our economy, which is deeply unequal, and as I said, prioritized other interests than actually the things like healthcare and housing. But so I think that in terms of how this is going to change, I really think that ordinary people have to stand up again around housing. I think that's the only thing, and whatever political parties are in there need to feel the pressure of ordinary people to make the change. And I think that the reality is that we do have, you know, a functioning, relatively functioning state. We're a very wealthy country. There's no reason why, for example, a housing agency, a national housing agency, couldn't be set up that would build, you know, 10,000 affordable and social housing units each year, that you couldn't have, you know, a not-for-profit cooperative building rental housing, you know, affordable rental housing, not expensive rental housing. There's no reason why we can't do this. If you look at the ESB, for example, that's a really good model. It's a semi-state company. It provides, you know, fantastic service. Why can't we be doing that in housing?
But is that not down to ideology?
You're right in the sense that I think the government, as I mentioned earlier, is kind of beholden or is just follows this idea that the private market is the solution, rather than seeing, you see, if we go, you have to go back to like the Second World War, you go back to the first financial crash, you know, the Great Recession, the Great Depression in the 1930s. Like, the reason that happened was because the private market, what's called free market capitalism, was allowed to do whatever it wanted. And you had this huge inequality and you had market crashes. We saw it again in 2008. We had 30 years of deregulated markets. Markets been left to do whatever they want. And this was the whole point of the welfare state. It recognized that capital markets by themselves just create inequality. They exclude people. And that's why you have a state. That's the whole notion of it, why we pay taxes. And I think what's happened is we've gone too far down that road of just allowing the market, the private markets, dictate in key areas like housing in particular, but healthcare. And so the real question has to be then, well, you know, where do people come back in? And the state has to come in, governments, local authorities, housing associations, cooperatives. We have to go back to saying, look, we are the only ones who are going to actually guarantee that we'll build affordable housing. The private sector won't do it.
All right, Rory. Well, listen, fascinating to hear you. And if people want to get along, you will be speaking tonight at the Clonmel Park Hotel as part of that Housing and Homelessness public meeting. Rory, good to talk to you, and thanks for coming on with us.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on.
Bye-bye, Gino. Bye-bye. That's Dr. Rory Heron there, who's taking part. Seamus Healy, TD, is the chairperson tonight. I know Mike Allen is going to speak as well. Mike is head of advocacy at research at Focus Ireland. So that should be very interesting indeed. Let's take a break. We're live from Nina today. We're back with more in just a few moments.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
Welcome back to TIP today, live from Pier Street in Nina today. Glad to be joined in the studio now once again by Inspector Seamus Maher. Good morning to you, Seamus.
Good morning, Fran. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. I know you're very busy at the moment. Last week we spoke about counterfeit. You've had some luck in terms of an arrest, I think, did you?
Yes, we spoke here last Wednesday morning and we were able to arrest three individuals from the Charleville area, and I'm happy to report that all three are before the court. I suppose, Fran, it was a very useful media exercise in respect of, you know, your show and local print media. We were able to go to the different businesses and there's been very positive feedback about it, and they've been able to take the necessary precautions. So, you know, that's very important. And we're any business we've gone into, they've mentioned it to us, and, you know, that awareness is great.
Right, that's fantastic altogether. Will you talk to us about Operation Thor, because you're in your winter phase of that. How are things going, Seamus?
Last week we spoke about our burglary response unit and increased patrols in the Tipperary Division. It's led out by our Chief Superintendent, Catherine Keogh, and, you know, we spoke about driving on through the winter period and taking early action. So I suppose, just not to go into too much detail, it's the anti-crime strategy. It's focused on mainly prevention of burglaries, and associated crimes, property crimes from farms, etc. And, you know, we like to engage with the victims, particularly around Operation Tor. It's running for 3 days, 4th, 5th and 6th of December. I suppose different areas we work on is crime prevention, community advice, crime investigation, and follow-up searches, of course, working in partnership with the community. We like to go into the schools and, you know, greater visible support, really. And that's what it's all about.
Right. And that's what people are looking for from the Gardaí, aren't they? They want to see you.
Yeah, I suppose the message is, you know, get out there, meet the people, and that's what Operation Tor is all about. And if criminal interdiction or interception comes along the way, you know, that's fantastic. And, you know, we do have lots of good detections in around our operational period, and this operation has been no different. I suppose in the last 2 days, and just to give you a kind of a flavour of what we're about in respect of in crime investigation, you know, we've had 37 arrests for property crimes and associated crimes, which is absolutely fantastic, and it's a big plus. We've carried out 11 property searches, 40 crime orientated checkpoints, and you know, 9 warrants executed. That just gives you a flavour and of what we're doing as part of our criminal interdiction program.
And that's in a short time.
That's over the last 2 days, Fran. Oh, wow. And today, it's still running throughout today. And we've been busy briefing our units at 7 a.m. this morning. And, you know, all our units across the county are gone out there. They're doing their work. And, you know, brief them. And our Gardaí are great. You know, when you give them a task, they go for it with gusto. And they're absolutely committed to Operation Tor.
Very good indeed. Now, you've got some other information from around the county for us as well.
Yeah, Fran, just to tell you that part of Operation Tor, we spoke about property crime. We had two persons were arrested in a joint operation between our Gardaí in Templemore and Newport yesterday. We had people detained in Nina here in relation to theft of farm machinery. A file is being prepared. Our burglary unit were able to support that operation, which was fantastic. And just in relation to residential burglaries, I know it's something that that people worry about, and we spoke about last week about light up, lock up, and the need to keep your premises safe. I'm able to report that Gardaí and Clonmel have a man arrested for 3 residential burglaries, and he's currently being questioned at the minute. They occurred over the last 2 days. And in Cashel, there's a man charged with a burglary that happened on the 3rd of December. So that's great work by the Gardaí in Cashel. And Gardaí and Turles have also been very active in respect of planned search of premises in the Croke Gardens area where they recovered property that was stolen from retail premises. So great work being done by our Gardaí across the county, and, you know, happy to report that to you.
There's been some drug seizures as well, I know.
Yeah, Fran, I suppose our drugs unit was revamped by our Chief Superintendent, Catherine Keogh, and, you know, she was anxious that around the county that there was a good number of Gardaí focused on drugs. We have a 45% increase in sailor supply incidents, which is significant, and plus personal use in respect of all types of drugs, 31% as well. So that's huge work done by our Divisional Drugs Unit. Our Gardaí and Nina, our drugs unit, were able to make a couple of seizures over the weekend as well, and very significant seizures, and they're to be complimented.
Now, let's have a look at some crime prevention, because I was reading on social media last night about the theft in the silver mines area. You're focusing in on theft from cars. We really have to be careful, haven't we?
Yeah, I suppose no different to any other time of year. Opportunist theft from MPVs, or as we use our acronyms of the guards, theft from cars in the silver mines area yesterday afternoon. Businessmen were out, and they'd left their vehicles. Money was stolen from the cars. Happy to report that a laptop wasn't, that was in the car, was very valuable, so that was good news. But I suppose if I can just be offer a little bit of advice to people, you know, theft from cars, nationally over 50 theft from cars occur per month. August and December are our peak months, so that's why I want to make an appeal today to people to, you know, not leave property in cars. Yeah. Tuesday and Fridays are our peak days. 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. are our peak times. 1 in 7 vehicles that were broken into were unlocked, which is roughly around the average. We had 1
That's incredible.
Unlocked. Yeah, which is incredible. So people don't lock their cars in some instance. Usually when it's a retail park, or if you're going in shopping, you probably forget, you know, and that's understandable in some way as well. And about €600 is the average amount of property stolen from cars. And I suppose just the items that are stolen most common are cash, tools, electronics and handbags. They're the most common objects stolen. So, you know, don't leave those items in the car. Don't make it easy for criminals to break into your car. This time of year, they'll be scanning shopping centres, car parks, public amenity areas.
So anything visible, Seamus, they're going to go for, aren't
Absolutely,
they?
Yeah. Fran. You know, they'll take the opportunity, and we need to be mindful of that.
Interesting. You're appealing to the public for some assistance. The public always very good to you, in fact, aren't they, you know?
Yeah, I suppose, Fran, to be fair, we've had great response when we do our media piece and request any information. People tend to ring their local guard station if they have any information. And I suppose in relation to burglaries, which, you know, Operation Tower is a focus of, I would ask if anybody has any information in relation to two burglaries and an attempted burglary that occurred in the Clonmel Federate area over the weekend of the 1st to the 3rd of December. We're looking for information in relation to a Smoky Grey, which is the name of Audi A3, may have had a partial reg of LH. Now, we can't confirm that it may have had a partial reg of LH. But what we would ask, if people have dash cams, if you have CCTV, if the car drew your attention, please ring our Garda confidential line or ring your local Garda station. That would be very significant, and the Garda Clonmel would be very interested in your support.
Right, so a grey Audi A3. Is that the sporty-looking one?
There's a number of sporty-looking Audis, and I think this is particularly sporty-looking as well.
All right, National Missing Persons as well day, of course. A dreadful situation when people go missing for families, isn't it?
Yeah, and an investigation I was involved with myself with Superintendent William Leahy. You know, it's a very difficult time of year for a family who have missing loved ones. And if I could just make a new appeal or a fresh appeal for any information in relation to Bridget Madigan. She went missing from Clonmel in July of 2016 and hasn't been located since. I know the Gardaí in Clonmel have done extensive work in relation to Bridget, but her family are always anxious, and this time of year it's a particularly hard time for families. So if you have any information that you could, any small bit of detail, provide to the Gardaí in Clonmel, that would be appreciated.
All right, and just finally, Seamus, you want people to take care of shopping, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose just to be safe on a night out, I have some little details. We have our acronyms again in the Guards. So I would say we have an information about safe shopping and nights out. It's called PLANS. So, you know, five little points just to be careful of. Plan your night out. How are you getting there? How are you getting back? If you could let someone know where you're going and when you're coming back, avoid walking alone in dark places. Never attempt to reason with drunk or aggressive people. You know, leave that to the Gardaí. It's wise to do so. Streetwise, and be wary of your surroundings and always mind your property. You know, if we can keep the instance of crime down, very important. Just about safe parking as well, Fran, if I could ask people to secure their doors and windows and set their alarm if they have an alarm in the car. Double check that the cars are locked. Don't leave any property on display, as we spoke about earlier on, and park in well lit and secure areas. And please report your thefts. If we don't know about it, we can't do follow up work, and we're anxious to reacquaint people with their property when it's stolen.
All right, listen, it's always good to see you, Seamus, and thanks very much indeed.
Inspector, you too, Seamus, Fran, and thank you for all your help and support.
You're very welcome indeed. 1800 938 007. We're live from Nina. We'll take a break. More Tip Today on the way.
Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
And you're very welcome back to Tip Today. Now let's have a look at what's coming in on text. It's coming in hot and heavy, that's for sure, Trudy.
It certainly is indeed, and lots of reaction there to our caller about the programme on carers. Emily White in Cashel. Morning, Fran. I agree with that lady. It was an excellent programme, but so heartbreaking for the carers. Magnificent people caring 24 hours a day for their loved ones, and so little help from the HSE or from the government. My heart is broken for them all. And that's from Emily White in Douala and Cashel Road there. We had several callers to us along the same vein. Dennis got in touch, and what really upset him, and I have to say it was pretty upsetting too, is when a mother who has been taking care of her daughter all her life, her daughter's in her 50s, and the mother turned around and her biggest hope was that her daughter would actually die before her, because she feared for what would happen to her daughter had the mother passed away. And he said, I just left him deeply, deeply upset. And we had a couple of callers along the same veins on that. You know, one man said he just went to bed crying. He was so disgusted and upset by what he had seen and how little the state actually cares for people in this country. And when you put that up against the pensions, he said, and, you know, the super rich, and, you know, and how little is spent in terms of the most important people in the state. And he was quite animated
about
that.
I know that last year, of course, we did a whole series on carers in County Tipperary, and we worked with Family Carers Ireland and Richie Malloy on that, and they were the most inspiring, wonderful people. I don't know how they keep going.
No, neither do I. I just don't know. When I think about it, I just, you know. Des got in touch again. He said he found it hard to watch that programme. It's hard to look at so many people suffering. Mary got in touch, said she works with adults with intellectual disabilities, and some of these have challenging behaviour and their parents are quite old. In South Tip, there's only one adult respite house for all these people and the waiting list is huge. I feel so sorry for the parents who badly need a break and just can't get one. This government should be ashamed of themselves. Nice. Eileen got in touch. She said she totally agrees with her caller. They're all too old in Dáil Éireann, and Eileen feels, and they should move on. Declan Dunphy said the government are a disgrace. That's in relation to the caller again. Dan in Tlaheen believes that woman, that's our caller, was dead right. The government are a disgrace and they're doing nothing for the ordinary person. Again, Anne Harding in Glengool got in touch to say, well said, Mary. And she said that Charlie was the only one. And they go on and on. John got in touch and he goes, yeah, you know, you've the lads there on the TDs giving themselves pay rises and giving pensioners €6 a year off their medicine. Big deal. Another caller said the ordinary person in Ireland is, and in capital letters, disgusted with this country at the minute. They go on to state that Varadkar is far too removed from the ordinary person. He has no feeling or understanding of what families are facing in this country. Poverty is rife in Ireland, but kept hidden. It's sad times in Ireland. Mick O'Brien took exception with some of what Mary was saying. She said, does that lady believe that all ability is confined to young people? What a load of bull.
Well, I put that to her, mm-hmm. that, you know, sometimes experience might be, and it's a relatively young cabinet now.
Like yeah, it is a relatively, ago, yeah, exactly.
You know? So there you go. All right, Judy, thanks for that. I know there's lots more mm-hmm. in there as well, but do keep texting us on 083 311 3311. We're live from Pierce Street in Nenagh.